from a pit stop on the King Alfred's Way. Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, Dan here is feeling brave, and we'll be putting forward a case for why Mathieu van der Poel won't win the UCI World Championships this year.
Whilst Sai has decided not to commit career suicide by making the argument for why he might, although mainly based on the fact he is an unapologetic fanboy.
I mean, that is true.
It is true. We've also got news of a lifetime cycling contract, a new helmet safety leaderboard,
and how cyclists are now having to make way for bats.
Bats.
Bats, yeah, like the black things that fly at night.
I know what they are.
Oh.
I was just surprised we're making way for them. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that both Grace Brown and Remco Evenepoel are the undisputed king and queen of time trials, winning the World Championships at the weekend to add to their Olympic gold medals from August.
Yeah, for Grace Brown, that is quite the mic drop, isn't it? Because she is set to retire at the end of the season and will now have a gold bike covered in rainbows on which to ride to the coffee shop on forevermore. We also learned that the hunt for aerodynamic performance has just taken another step too far with the RAF 1 aerodynamic backpack.
I mean, leaving aside that it looks utterly ridiculous.
Utterly.
It also seems fundamentally flawed, doesn't it? Seeing as it serves both as a fairing, but also, in order to hold its shape, a parachute as well.
Yeah. That is coming to Kickstarter soon.
Oh, good.
For those of you that don't care about either performance or looks, it would seem.
We also learned this week that the number one ranked female climber on Strava, Ellie Gardner, has just been QOM hunting over in Italy.
Yeah, she added the Stelvio, the Giao, and also the Zonkaland to her considerable stash of 10,055 QOMs. On the Zonkaland as well, she beat none other than Annemiek van Vleuten and sits in 10th overall.
From anybody that's ever done it.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ellie was a pro, but decided that that lifestyle wasn't for her. You've got to think, though, that it must be quite tempting to reverse that decision and make a comeback.
Well, I mean, if I was the best climber in the world...
Big if.
Yeah, I probably would.
Yeah,
but, you know, that's just saying, yeah.
But if you were the best climber in the world, you might be about to win the World Road Race Championships this coming Sunday, wouldn't you?
Well...
Which brings us, fairly neatly, onto a very difficult and painful chat that we had at the coffee machine this morning.
I mean, honestly, I don't really want to go there again.
Well,
Dan.
We're going there.
Okay, so. Right.
So I've been creating some very complicated algorithm spreadsheets and graphs, and so I can confirm with absolute certainty that Mathieu van der Poel will not retain his UCI road race crown in Zurich this Sunday.
You sound very confident in this, Dan.
Hmm.
I mean, given that van der Poel is targeting this race, your confidence seems potentially misplaced. Are you willing to put anything on this?
I would put a fiver.
A fiver.
On this. Yeah.
That's I mean, I thought the way you were talking, you'd put like your house on it or something like that.
I'll go up to a tenner.
A tenner.
I'll go up
right,
to a tenner,
okay.
Yeah. Anyway, further to our coffee machine chat, sort of sat beavering away at my laptop looking at all the races that Van der Poel has won on the road, how much elevation gain there was at each one, and how much elevation gain per kilometre there was.
That's quite impressive. Mm. I can confirm that Dan was actually beavering.
I was, yes. And then I compared
Yeah.
I compared it to the amount of climbing they're going to be tackling at the World Championships in Zurich this Sunday.
And?
And he's not going to win.
Well, that was even quicker than the coffee machine chat. Would you like to share the findings?
I'd love to.
The beavering?
Go on then. So, the race that he has won with the most amount of climbing was Amstel Gold 2019, that incredible attack. Well, he attacked and then he got caught, didn't he? Then he went all the way through the groups that dropped him, about 100 of them there were.
Yeah.
And then he outsprinted everybody at the end, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, who can forget that? Mm. One of the most memorable races of all time. Frankly, one of the greatest single performances of all time.
Easy, Tiger. I mean, it was memorable, but only 3,500 metres of climbing over 266 kilometres.
Okay, and how much is there on Sunday?
Well, Si, let me show you my bar graph. I'll put it on the screen for viewers to look at right now.
Okay, will you, or will Isaac Edits RV be the one putting it up?
Yes, Isaac. That's a joke from last week's show, in case you missed it. Anyway, there is the graph on screen now. Thank you, okay. Isaac. So the blue bars are the metres of elevation gain for each of the races that he's won, except for that last one. That's the Worlds this Sunday. Quite a big jump, I think you will agree.
It is. Yeah, I will give you that. What are the little red ones?
The red ones are metres of elevation gain per kilometre of race, to give a bit more context as to how hard each race was for the distance. And this is where my abilities with spreadsheets and graphs fell down slightly, because the scale that you can see there is not very clear.
No, not
but
really.
I can tell you there are 16.42 metres of climbing per kilometre at the Worlds this coming Sunday.
Okay.
And only four of his wins, of the total of 45, had more elevation gain than that per kilometre.
Okay. What were those four wins?
From memory, sorry. Tour of Britain, Stage 4, 2019. 16.76 metres per kilometre,
okay.
But 100k shorter than Sunday's race, and not quite as competitive in terms of the field, obviously.
No, okay.
Strade Bianche 2021, 16.85 metres per kilometre, but 90k shorter.
Okay.
The Baloise Belgium Tour last year, 18.5 metres per kilometre, but 100k shorter, that one.
Okay. But like 18.5 metres per kilometre in that Belgian Tour stage versus 16.42 this Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Then the fourth one, finally, the Tour of Luxembourg, Stage 1, which was 16.46 metres per kilometre.
Okay. And that was?
That was just under a week ago.
Okay. So just under a week ago, he won a race with almost exactly the amount of climbing per kilometre as this year's World Championships. And a year ago, he won a race with way more metres per kilometre than this year's Worlds.
Mm. Yeah, but as I pointed out, they were both about 100 kilometres or more shorter.
Yeah, but I'm starting to understand why you're only willing to bet a fiver on this.
I went out to a tenner. Shaky. I went out to a tenner. Go small or go out. That's my motto.
I've not heard that one before. But anyway, I was about to make my case for Mathieu van der Poel winning on Sunday, but I think you have done it for me. You have both proven and disproven your own theory within a space of only a few minutes.
I have not. I mean, the only races of a similar distance that he's won had at least 1,000 metres less climbing, and the only races he's won with a similar amount of climbing were 100 kilometres shorter, climbing per kilometre.
All right, I take your point. I'm still saying he can win.
Can win or will win?
Can win, yeah.
I think go small or go out should be your motto as well.
Well, yeah, no, hang on a minute, right. Firstly, okay, this is Van der Poel.
Mm.
He is a rider for big events. He's a man who hits his targets,
right. Isn't
he? I mean, five of his last 10 wins were in either monuments or world championships. When he shoots, he scores.
You're starting to sound like Alan Partridge.
Back of the net.
Stop that now. Stop that now.
It sounds like this is a race that he has been targeting,
yeah,
doesn't it? Right, like, because there's so much climbing, he's lost a couple of kilos.
We understand.
Yes. I don't know where, you know, nothing to lose, did he really? But apparently he's lost a couple of kilos.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's ready.
He'll still be around, what would that make him, 73, 74 kilos? I reckon that is still too much over a course of that distance.
Well, he's the sole leader, isn't he, of the Dutch team? At least that's how it looks on paper, given the selection. So they'll be able to keep him protected for most of it, you would think. Save his energy for that finale. I mean, remind me what the climbs are like, because that's important too, right?
Well, yeah, like I said, 4,500 metres total. There's some before they get to the circuits. But on that circuit, there's a short, punchy one, 1.5 kilometres, roughly at 7% average, I think it is, but steeper gradients of 14%.
Not bad for Mathieu, is it, really?
It's not, no. But then there is a longer one, which is over 2 kilometres at 6%.
6%? That's not even climbing, is it? What would it be, five minutes?
Probably about 5 minutes, yes.
Yeah. It's not quite as bread and butter, but I don't think there'd be many people who can better Van der Poel over 5 minutes.
Not in a singular 5 minute climb, but it's the repetitive nature of them, Si.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tour of Flanders, that repetitive nature makes them come unstuck all the time.
No, but they're not 5 minute climbs. On this course, it's 7 laps, so 7 of those 5 minute climbs, and each time that climb comes after the short, punchy one.
It's a bit like Liège-Bastogne-Liège, isn't it? Where he finished second at like his.
Yeah, but a long way behind the winner, anyway.
Well, okay. I'm going to stick to my guns on this one, yeah. Because he is going to be right up there, and it would not be a surprise one bit if he won.
Hold your horses, because I have just thought of one more thing to add to my case of why he won't win.
Is he going to need a spreadsheet, Dan?
No, I don't actually think I needed to make that spreadsheet in hindsight, what I've just thought about. All I needed to do to show why Van der Poel is not going to win this Sunday was open up a fresh document, blank page, and write or type Tadej Pogacar on it. That on its own is the proof that he won't win.
Well, I mean, that is probably the most compelling argument that you have made so far. So potentially your fiver is safe.
Hope so. Yeah. Hope so. Otherwise it could be career suicide, like you said. Over to you at home then. If we gave you all a fiver, we're not going to, by the way, but if we gave you a fiver each to put a bet on Mathieu van der Poel either winning or not winning this coming Sunday, what would you put that money on? Let us know in the comment section just down below.
Yeah. You know, I once very memorably stuck my neck out in a GCN show and said that Vincenzo Nibali would not make...
That was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, 10 years ago this year, would not make the podium of the Tour de France. And he won it, didn't he?
He did.
So, yeah.
Well, it makes me feel a little bit better that I might still have a job and not be cancelled if he does win the rainbow bands again.
Yeah, you'll get over it in time. Just whatever you do, don't sweat through the armpits of a pink T-shirt, because that is career suicide.
Anyway, I'm sticking to the fact that Mathieu van der Poel will be wearing different kits from Sunday onwards.
Okay.
All right. And speaking of different kits, well, not really, just different T-shirts, you might have noticed we've got a couple of new designs on today, Si and myself, both of which you can find over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
You can indeed, yeah. That one's nice, isn't it?
So is that one.
Thanks.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we will start with the news that more expensive bike helmets are not necessarily safer. This, according to new research coming from Imperial College in London.
This is not new news, but it's always nice to hear.
Yes,
isn't
it is, yeah.
The researchers have created a new test protocol for putting helmets through their paces, having looked at data from real-world crashes. And rather than current sort of pass or fail helmet safety standards, they aim to create a leaderboard for the safest helmets.
Yeah. Now, I think this is an interesting one, right? So every helmet manufacturer that I've visited...
Which is how many have you visited?
Two.
Two.
I've visited two, yeah. Anyway, they did far more testing than just the basic ones. But where I think it gets interesting when you talk about like one helmet being safer than another is that those helmet brands weren't legally able to talk about safety. So I don't know quite why, but I think there's always this disconnect between any lab test and then whether something can actually be observed in real life data. So I think ultimately if you say something is safer, but you still have a horrific accident and end up with a traumatic brain injury or death or whatever.
I'll take your point. It's good point, well made.
Thank you very much.
But back to the original point about more expensive not being safer, that's a good message.
It is a good message, isn't it?
Particularly, actually, in a week where a UK active transport charity, Sustrans, have said that 2 million Brits are now priced out of cycling.
Yeah. Now, that is a headline which needs a bit of explaining, isn't it? Because as we've seen in recent weeks, on GCN, no less, you can buy bikes and accessories cheaply and have a great time on your bike. But what this specifically means is that people on low to no income can't get the benefits of buying a bike using their pre-tax salary. So they effectively don't get the discount that other people who earn more can. However, we shouldn't sidestep the issue, should we? I mean, this is a problem. And hopefully, people in power are listening to it.
Well, this is the GCN show, Si.
Yeah, well, that is true.
They weren't listening before. They will be now, surely.
True. Hopefully, like Mathieu van der Poel is listening and now has an axe to grind and a point to prove. Moving on from van der Poel to his rival, Wout van Aert. He has just, rather strangely, in my mind, signed a lifetime contract.
Yes, which is not something I'd heard of before.
No one offered you one, did they?
No, I'm sort of hoping to get one after this show, immediately after the show, actually, after we've recorded it, before it goes out.
Yeah.
Anyway, the always informative and knowledgeable Inner Ring posted a blog to their site last week, and in it claimed that Chris Froome and Mike Woods have retirement contracts with Israel Premier Tech, which allows them to race for that team as long as they wish to.
Crikey. Mm. I've not heard that. It's a good deal if you can get it, isn't
it? Yeah, we should try and get one of those.
Yeah.
But you do have to imagine there are a lot of clauses and fine print in that new Wout van Aert contract.
Not too fine in the case of Chris Froome, is it, really?
I mean, back to the new contract. I hadn't heard of it before, and I think obviously it has to work for both parties, isn't it? I was listening to the What's Occurring podcast on the way in this morning, and Luke Rowe was speculating there'd be perhaps a diminishing annual salary for Van Aert, but an increasing bonus scheme, meaning that the team aren't over the odds paying him if his results drop off a cliff.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, because you've got to think, haven't you, if you sign a lifetime deal, you could just take your foot off the gas and be like, well, quid's it?
Just be on the beach.
Don't offer Dan a lifetime contract. I actually was looking at some stats on lifetime contracts, Kate. Here in the UK, 42% of lifetime contracts are broken. And in the United States, it's 50%.
You're talking about divorces.
I am talking about divorces, yeah.
That would be quite the headline, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would.
Wout van Aert and Visma Lisebike set for divorce. Although, to be fair, that is pretty much what happened with Van Aert's previous team, wasn't it? They had a non-acrimonious separation and it all ended up in court.
It did indeed, yeah. Yeah, squabbling over, like, who gets the house and, yeah, all sorts. Right, moving on from divorce. Next up, cyclists, as we've often said, are the forgotten road user. And it turns out that not only do we come second to cars and second to pedestrians, we also come second to bats.
Bats?
Bats, yeah. Now, okay, I'm smiling. It's not actually a joke. I don't believe for 1 minute that we do come second to bats. But forgive us for talking about a bit of very local news. A bike path, which I use every week, part of the legendary Saturday morning cross ride, has been closed for a year due to a major development, okay? The plans for how my new bike path will look when it's finished have been causing a bit of controversy, okay? Because it's only 3 metres wide as a result of a 6 metre wide bat corridor that it sits next to.
Crikey. No wonder there's been a lot of controversy.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, this was agreed 3 years ago.
Apparently.
So it's a bit late to change, isn't it? But if anything, it serves as a reminder of just how difficult planning decisions can be and how much compromise needs to be made.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm actually not sure I disagree with prioritising bats. Like, I think they're a fairly marginalised bunch of individuals, aren't they? I'm just frankly excited to get any kind of bike path back. Now, loads of you are out every week doing amazing, inspiring rides for charity. Lachlan Morton, still going on his lap of Australia, by the way. As we film this, he's in Perth on the West Coast, 61% of the way through, and seemingly gathering momentum, having racked up a number of 600-kilometre-plus days.
Do you reckon Mark Beaumont is starting to get genuinely worried at this point?
Worried that you're going to insult him again?
Yes, in the next interview. Hopefully I won't do that again.
Not again, no.
Anyway, as well as Lachlan, we want to give a shout-out to Steve Eastwood, who's tackled the Facey 50, 50 climbs on a brutal-looking 400k ride, which had 10,000 metres of climbing.
Oh, yeah, hats off. He was raising money for the Home Valley Mountain Rescue Team. Very worthy cause. Just looking at his Strava map makes me feel anxious.
Same.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah, it's like a little scribble, like, one of those. Yeah. Right, just before we move on, we would like to ask you for your help.
Oh, yes,
please.
Yes, we would. Now, some of you, probably not many, but some of you will be aware that we, GCN, now offer bike insurance in the UK and over in the US. But we've got a slight problem, haven't we?
We do, yeah. We're not great salespeople.
No.
At the best of times, are we? But selling insurance, I mean, how the hell do you make that sound interesting and exciting?
Exactly, which is why you come into the equation. We want to know your experience of having or not having insurance for your bike, the theory being that you'll basically be able to do our job for us.
Genius.
Genius, yeah.
Lifetime contract coming down to play. In a couple of weeks, we hope to read out some of the best and, I suppose, on the flip side, worst stories, which will hopefully help sell how important it is to have insurance and put the fear into anyone without it.
Simples.
I don't think we're going to be allowed to do the meerkat stuff.
I'm glad you recognise that.
I reckon there's a copyright on that or something.
I'd imagine there is. That'll be completely over the heads of anyone not in the UK, I expect.
It's like the Alan Partridge
yes.
joke earlier. Anyway, genuinely though, we're really interested as well to know your experiences. So get involved in the comments. Nothing gory, please, or graphic. Just any stories about a time you wish you'd had bike insurance but didn't, or how having insurance was a lifesaver, figuratively speaking. And furthermore, anyone who does take out insurance through GCN will also be helping us to keep making videos, which of course we hugely appreciate, as hopefully some of you might as well.
Hopefully. hack / bodge of the week now, that part of the show. We have a look through the various hacks or bodges that you lot have sent us in the last week. The first one this week comes in from Stephen G, who said, going to be off the bike for quite some time, having had surgery to reattach a quad tendon.
Whoa.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Not sure how aero it is or whether I'll be allowed out in public with it. 2 weeks post-surgery, goodness knows what I'll be reduced to in another 2 months.
So what we're looking at is a pair of crutches with a water bottle cage attached. I mean, that looks like ripe for kind of all sorts of bike packing accessories when you think about it. What are those cages that you put on the fork legs? Anything cages. You could have a sleeping bag strapped to it. You could have like your lunch. Oh, I think that's great.
I mean, it sounds like you're going to have a great time, Stephen, with this detached quad tendon.
Oh, I feel for you.
Could I just recommend an e-scooter? We were actually talking about this morning, weren't we? Because our colleague Jacob has unfortunately had a bit of an injury to his ankle. Knee scooter was the best thing I ever purchased with a broken ankle.
There you go. There's a tip you didn't know you were going to get from the GCN show this week.
Reason being is that the reason that you have to have this bottle on the crutches is because once you're trying to walk around in crutches, on crutches, you can't take anything around with you unless it's in a backpack. A cup of tea, for example, impossible.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why the knee scooter was genius, because I could just, I had the skills to go one-handed on the knee scooter.
Oh my goodness me. Mm. Well, there you go. Anyway, I hope your rehab is smooth, swift and easy, Stephen, because that sucks. And because I feel sorry for her, I think we should say hack.
Hack.
Yeah, it's not really in keeping with this part of the show, is it? But still, I feel for you, Stephen. All right, next up, we've got this one from Stanley. I'm an avid triathlete. Most every race, we get a number sticker which has to be wrapped around your seatpost. When I did a duathlon, I suffered this fate as well. I can never get the stickers to wrap neatly and end up with a wrinkled, uneven tag. Also, when I remove the sticker, I get annoying residue on my seatpost which has to be cleaned. As a solution, I 3D printed a custom number holder. Yeah, that looks super cool, doesn't it? Like, what a genius idea. Actually have somewhere to stick sticky things that's not your bike.
Yeah. And it's good, isn't it?
Hopefully you can then remove it swiftly as opposed to what most triathletes seem to do, which is to leave all their numbers on their bikes.
No.
Just ride around on it, yeah. See them BAD, yeah, see them all the time.
Is that because they can't be bothered to take them off, or is that some kind of look how many races I've done?
I think it might. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to judge, but I mean...
You do.
Inside, I've judged, yeah. It's the look what race I've done thing.
I don't want to judge openly.
But just between us lot. Yeah, okay. No, I think that's a hack, as you said. Mm. That's well good, isn't it?
That is fantastic. It looks like a professional level number.
Yeah, and it's 3D printed, so
Done. Paul wrote in to say, my new-to-me frame came with a significantly longer steerer tube on the fork than I was expecting, so I made a sleeve that threads on to let me clamp a modern threadless stem to it.
So, for those of you not familiar with that type of bike, so you basically, the fork has a thread on it that you then like tighten a nut onto, and then the stem like fits into the fork, doesn't it?
A quill
stem, thank you, Dan. As opposed to the stem clamping directly onto the fork. But in this instance, I can't work out whether that's genius or whether an engineer is going to have their head in their hands at this point saying, no, it's not designed for that, therefore it...
For being clamped around.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say this even though...
As a structural engineer.
Yeah, even though I've got no qualifications at all, I sort of presume that if it's got the structural integrity to have a quill stem expanding out, it's hopefully strong enough to have something wrapped around it clamping on.
There we go.
But
all right,
if
job
you know
done.
More than me, which a lot of you will, let us know whether there could be any structural problems with this solution.
But I like the I like what you've gone with.
Concept.
Paul, basically, yeah, concept. Thank you very much. Yeah, I like that very much. It looks cool.
Same.
It looks like a cool frame as well, doesn't it?
Go with this. I'm going to go hack. But if loads of people know what they're talking about write in and say, no, don't ride that, then I'll revert to bodge next week.
Are you going to take that?
Go with the herd.
You're going to take that same approach with Matthew Van Der Poel winning the world?
Yes.
Just going to change the tune. This show won't exist on Sunday afternoon.
No, well, we just sort of change the thumbnail and title, and I'll try and change all of the content for the show.
right, okay. I haven't said anything. I'm going to say hack /bodge for that one.
Looks like an Allen frame, doesn't it? The first ever carbon frame, which had the is it aluminium lugs?
Yeah, aluminium lugs, carbon tubes, yeah, an Allen or a Vitus or a Look or something like that. Yeah, pretty cool, huh? Yeah. Right, Luke Sanders, going to finish off this week's Hackathon. Oh, no, he's not. Oh, yes, he is. Going to finish, sorry.
That's right, mate.
Just getting a bit lost there. Luke Sanders is going to finish off definitively this week's Hackle Bodge. Why waste money on expensive cycling-specific cleaning products when you can just use random stuff out of the cupboard of dreams under the sink and have your bike smelling lemon zesty? As an added plus, it's also antibacterial, so I can also touch my bike as much as I want without fear of contracting Ebola from it. I mean, that's not a fear that I ever have, really, but...
I like the added bit at the bottom where he says it's also more cost-effective if you're not the person that purchases random cleaning products found in the cupboard. Sounds like quite a character, Luke, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I can't say whether or not Dettol does function as a bike degreaser, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd 100% trust putting anything from under the kitchen sink on a very expensive frame, just on the off chance that it could be a bit stronger than expected.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a bodge, isn't it, basically?
It is a bodge. Dettol. Well...
I mean, it is.
To be honest, I don't know why I'm passing. I've got no idea whether or not Dettol would be good, bad, or indifferent for cleaning a precious bike frame.
I'm also not willing to try.
No.
Just in case.
Well, that's fine. Luke's done it for us.
Yeah. Thanks, Luke. Let us know whether your bike has disintegrated this last week.
Yes.
Right. Thank you all for sending in your hacks and bodges. Keep them coming, of course. Photos or indeed a video, like Luke has sent in.
Yes. globalcyclingnetwork.com/upload.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. Not one of the full bad boy metal ones, but the iconic podium bottle. Should we have an update?
If you want.
Champagne update. Still good?
I think it needs to stay shut for about 4 weeks and then get a retest.
Yeah, okay, all right. Keep you posted at Christmas. Right, this was the photo that we gave you last week, which we asked you to caption. The best, Dan, was?
Cutter Pilot, who wrote... There's some numbers after the name, but I can't imagine there's that many Cutter Pilots who entered the caption competition. The rewards for winning are really becoming a rip-off these days.
For podcast
listeners, this was Ellen van Dijk with her child, or baby, should I say, up on the podium of the European Championships. The baby trying to steal the gold medal from Lotte Kopecky's neck.
Right, well done, Cutter Pilot. Get in touch with us and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you. We've got another podium shot for you this week. This is Remco Evenepoel looking fairly diminutive compared to the two Italians that he's just beaten to the World Time Trial Champs.
The Italian stallions, yeah, Ganna and Affini. I'll get you started.
Got him.
Remco Evenepoel standing under the shoulder of giants.
Oh my word, I mean they do really look like, how tall is Ganna?
He's about 6'4", which would be like 191.
Oh yeah, he's quite a tall lad then, isn't he?
Yeah.
He wouldn't even look that small next to Connor.
No?
Right, that was a good one, Dan. If you think that you can beat Dan, or even equal it actually this week, because you have set the bar high, stick your caption in the comment section underneath this video and we'll pick a winner next week.
A few of the favourite comments that we picked out from the last week's worth of videos now before we let you know what's coming up on GCN this week. Firstly, from underneath last week's GCN show, this came in from Jimstay85. Jimster? I confess, I was an ignorant motorist who would say and think all the clichés. They shouldn't be on the road, they should pay road tax, the roads are for motorists, not bikes, etc. Then I decided to give it a go. Now I ride to work, lost weight, fitter than I've ever been, save money, feel happier. I still own a car for convenience, although it's not that convenient when I spend a lot of time stuck in roadworks or congestion. I'm a car driver who now thinks, yeah, ban the tin boxes from cities. Better yet, raise road tax to pay for better cycling infrastructure. The savings will pay tenfold.
Amen. Jimster, that's really cool, isn't it? Properly cool. I'd love to know what the catalyst was for giving it a go.
Mm.
But anyway, fantastic. It makes me feel like positive, you know? That's fantastic. Next up, we've got this one from Bra 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 Bra. Bra Bra Barbara.
No. Bra 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 Bra.
Okay, there we go. It's remarkable that car drivers see these cyclists as one homogenous group, but have no problem separating the masses of speeding, rule-breaking and illegally loud and obnoxious motorists from themselves. That is true, isn't it? But then I guess we're probably all guilty of that, right? Like, I look at those people riding bikes, like, breaking all the rules and think, well, they're not like, you know, they're not like me. They're just like a whatever. But, you know, it's self-preservation, I suppose, isn't it?
Probably is, yes. Meanwhile, you, down with PJC, put, let's implement road tax. Find the most vocal bike hater and ask him to set the rate for cyclists. With this as a base, determine the tax for cars, trucks and buses based on their relevant axle weight.
It used to be done on relative axle weight, didn't it, I think, many years ago?
Did it?
Yeah, now I think now it's done on emissions. But yeah, I mean, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? And then lastly, I wanted to pick this comment out from William Fowler, who I can't read out your entire comment, but I just want to say thank you very much for it. William said, while I understand why Cy doesn't like commercial plantation forestry, I don't agree with his statement about it limiting biodiversity. Anyway, William then sets out very neatly a case for why it is actually good for biodiversity and why forestry is actually very good as a reason to use the land, basically.
Did he agree that it makes for great single track as well?
We didn't even get on to gravel or mountain biking, but yeah. But anyway, there we go. So yeah, thank you, William. I appreciated that.
Timbuktu underneath We Ride a Tour de France winner's old bike. Is it still fast? Said that they've got an SL5 tarmac, also replaced the Pressfit BB with a threaded one. The cups don't thread into the frame. The left cup threads to the right cup in the middle of a tube attached to them. Also good for perfect alignment.
Yeah, thanks for that. I was basically, there was a threaded bottom bracket on Contador's bike. Mm. I was wondering how it was done, but there you go. Cherry Agana said, when you look at the upper body muscles, you wouldn't think that Andrew was the hill climber, which I'm guessing is a slight on my biceps, isn't it?
So inadvertently, perhaps.
Yeah,
or maybe what, purposely.
I mean, you might not think that looking at the upper body muscles, but you would definitely think that if you looked at our ankles, wouldn't you? Basically, so
or if you watched them ride.
Thanks, Dan.
My pleasure. Can we ride 88 kilometres in under 2 hours? London to Brighton record attempt. Ian Stretch said, "Yes, guys, that's me with Hank." It was amazing meeting you all. Thanks for taking the time. Cycling and GCN saved my life. I really mean that. Before cycling, I struggled with so much in life, but finding the sport and then GCN was a game changer. Love you all. Ah, crikey, so I pulled that one out when he just read it.
Yeah.
That's
so cool. Yeah, it was great to meet you, Ian. And yeah, just brilliant. Thanks for letting us know. Chris M said, like the line about Lance would cut the corner. I mean, he would, wouldn't he? Oh, he did it in the Tour de France that time.
He did, yeah.
I mean, admittedly, they let him get away with it, but...
He was trying to avoid Kosovo Bilocchi at the time, wasn't he? We raced a pro. How slow are we? Baza Surf said, always knew pros were good, but this is outrageous.
It was pretty blooming impressive, wasn't it? I mean, that was an absolute demolition from our new secret weapon, Matt Holmes. And then Adzaham Sharapin said, I love the look on Connor's face when he was considered the weak link.
Very good.
Yeah.
Also, thank you to those of you who've given us, was it a super like or a...
Super thanks.
A super thanks, yes. We've had a few over the last week since we turned that on here on our YouTube channel. So massive thank you to those people who've contributed. One person sort of said, I've come to realise I take GCN for granted and so I just wanted to contribute because I realised I hate it if it ever dies.
Ah.
So that was really nice.
That's super cool. Well, yeah, thank you very much indeed for that. Yeah, we really appreciate it. We appreciate it if with super thanks, with memberships, whether it's going to the GCN shop.
Yeah, or even just sharing our videos, if you like them, obviously, with people that you think might also like them, makes such a huge difference to how well the channel does. So please bear that in mind if you can.
Yeah, we're always grateful, aren't we, for like, well, just feels like such a privilege. Yeah, basically. For watching them, for commenting. It's all really cool, isn't it? And it's so cool to meet people out and about as well that have enjoyed the videos over the years.
Basically, it's up to you whether or not we get lifetime contracts, isn't it? No pressure. Right, what's coming up on the channel this week? I'll start with Wednesday, where we're looking at the worst mistakes a beginner cyclist could make. so that you don't have to make them if you're just getting into the sport. Yeah. On Thursday, 13 things I wish I'd known about Zwift.
That's right, yeah. And then, so Ollie and Alex and Hank are currently in what can only be described as a complete and utter cycling paradise, but yet pretty much none of us had ever heard of it. Anyway, they're heading, they're currently in Northern Italy, and there'll be a video with you this weekend. We're pretty jealous, aren't we, that we missed out on that one? Quite annoying, because it sounds absolutely amazing. Although you have been to this cycling paradise before, haven't you, Dan? Because rumour has it, you have a Strava KOM outside where they're staying, which is the clubhouse.
Yeah, they won't get that one.
No, I don't think they will. I mean, I think it might be one of those ones that was done in a race and is now against the speed limit.
In a race on closed roads.
Yeah.
Yes.
Probably
through a load of traffic lights.
Yeah, getting a sticky bottle.
All right. Probably was. On Saturday. And on Sunday, how slow is a gravel bike?
Yes, I had a lot of fun filming this one. Mm. Out with power meters and various different bikes and wheels and stuff like that. That was good. We also thought we'd give a shout out to over on GCN Tech. A clean chain versus a dirty chain. How much power does a dirty chain lose you?
Mm.
I'm blooming fascinated to know this one.
Well, yeah. Do you need to get the Dettol out or not? That'll be answered in the video on GCN Tech this coming Sunday.
My money is the conclusion is you need to wax your chain, because that's the answer to everything.
Well, that's Ollie's answer to everything.
That is Ollie's answer to everything, yes. Yeah.
Right. I think that brings us to the end of the show this week. Don't forget to get involved in the comments. Let us know what you would do with your fiver. Would it go on Matthew Van Der Poel winning or not winning?
I'm looking forward to the race in this weekend.
Oh, it's going to be a cracking race, yes.
It's good to be said. Well, and the women's one as well. It's going to be Puk Pietersen. My money's on her.
I mean, she's not probably top three favourites, but perhaps she should be.
The
one thing with the women's race is that until next year, there's no separate under 23 category. So that is fought for within the elite women's race, which obviously sort of can change tactics a little bit. Because if one under 23 rider gets into the leading group, they might just sit on thinking, I'm sailing my way to gold medal in the under 23s or whatever the tactical outcome might be. But worth bearing in mind, from next year in Rwanda, there'll be a separate under 23 women's race finally.
We need to go to the Rwanda World Summit. That'd be amazing.
Murder Kigali, isn't
it? Yeah. We should point out, by the way, that if you want a full preview of the World Championships, there's one over on GCN Racing, isn't there?
Yeah. And that one, I said Van Der Poel's going to win, just to cover bases.